It's just Marina Avshlita. Dina de Malchus Adina. This is a phrase which we often hear slung around, and it is often misused and understood. So we're going to look at the parameters of this fascinating din. Where else do we find such a thing, where the halacha is actually adopting the law of the country in which we live? Whether it's England, America, or wherever, the halacha is actually endorsing that we are following the law of the land. Does it mean all laws of the land? Does it mean only certain laws of the land? Surely, if the law of the land conflicts with the Torah, we're not going to nullify the Torah. So we're going to look at what parameters exist in order to understand this din of Dina de Malchus Adina. We have to follow the law of the land. And we all know that in Perkei Avos, in Perek Gimel, Mishnah Beis, it says, Hava mispalel b'shlomo shel Malchus. We should always daven for the welfare of the kingdom in which we live, for Her Majesty the Queen and her wise and noble advisors, those who don't claim expenses, of course. And we have to understand in which circumstances or in which kinds of rule and dictatorship or democracies might this apply. The general principle is...
In Iran especially.
Certainly, if you have a nasty dictatorship which nobody agrees to in the country, does Dina de Malchus Adina apply? We can understand that there is a certain mentality amongst some of our co-religionists who feel as though it's them against the state. You know, we have suffered a lot in our history. Jews have been expelled from lands, their own properties have been confiscated without compensation. There has been anti-Semitism throughout Europe. We've had Jews throughout Arab lands. There are more Jewish refugees than Palestinian refugees. People have been driven out of Arab lands, and there is a natural feeling of resentment towards the non-Jewish government. But the halacha is one has to conform to the laws of the state. And certainly when people are living in a country where they have voted for a particular government, that will surely strengthen the fact that they have to comply with the rules. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. So what is the source for this halacha? Where does it actually come from? And what are the reasons behind it? Now, you've got in front of you a few Gemaras, and I just realized that you don't have the complete bits of photocopying on one of them, but we will soldier on nevertheless. You've got a Baba Kama Gemara Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, and the Mishnah halfway down the page. Ein Poetin, says the Mishnah halfway down the page. Ein Poetin lo mitevas hamosin v'lo mikis shel gaboy. One may not make use of or take change from the money box which is due for the tax man. Lo mikis shel gaboy, or the people who are running the tax authorities. They note me men tzedaka, one may not take from it tzedaka. But what is in one's house, which is reserved for that, one may use it. The idea is not to benefit from a certain kind of money, which is taken away wrongly. It's taken away in a manner, the Gemara will explain, which is unreasonable. So if we just jump in the Gemara to the beginning there, it says Tano avonosin lo dina avonosin lo sasha'er, which is another bit. That is, one can exchange dino saloim for change. But then we want the next bit. Mochsin, what does it mean? Vama Shmuel. Didn't Shmuel say dina de malchus lo dina? The law of the land is the law, and therefore you have to comply with it. We're talking here about a tax collector who is really unauthorized. Ein lo kitzvah means he's not fixed, he's not imposing tax at a specific level, he is just doing it at the whim of his fancy. Somebody, who, especially somebody who is not the king, but somebody who works under the king, who just at his whim says, oh, I think I'll make you pay more tax than everybody else, then that person we do not have to listen to. That is to say that we do have to comply with the rules of the state when it comes to national tax laws. But if somebody comes along and says, well, to a particular segment of society, or to the Jews, I'm going to charge more tax, then that's unfair. Zerei Rabbi Yanai, I remember Bemoches HaOmed Me'elov. This is talking about somebody who stands along in the tax office and doesn't go according to the rules set by the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He is setting the rules at his own fancy. Ikka Demasni Lo Ahot. So that we're talking about a case where Loibash Odom Kilaim Afilo Agabe Asor Begodim. We know there's a din of shatnas. You may not wear shatnas, mixture of wool and linen, even if 10 garments on top of each other and the top one is shatnas. Lavriach Bois HaMeches. If one does this in order to dodge the customs, because you have to pay heavy customs for certain items of clothing. And so it says you may not do this. Masnis and Loka Rabbi Akiva. This Mishnah, which can't be according to Rabbi Akiva to Sanya, because we learn, Osin Avriach HaSameches. He says you are not allowed to dodge the tax. So what does it mean? Obviously you can't wear shatnas, even to dodge the tax, as if to imply that you can dodge the tax. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Mishnah Rabbi Akiva, Mutin Avriach HaSameches. So in his opinion, Rabbi Shimon says you are allowed to dodge tax. Evasion is probably the right word. We know about the Shatner's rule. There is an argument whether you are intending to do the Aveira or not, and therefore you're not punishable. That's another department, says the Gemara, whether you've got Kavona to do the Aveira or not. But who allows this to actually evade taxation? Did not Shmuel say, Dina de Malchus of Dina, the law of the land is the law? We're dealing here where it's somebody who is standing in the customs and is imposing different rules for different people, and he doesn't like the look of your face, so he therefore asks for more tax. That is unfair. That is not on, and that you don't have to comply with. The person who is at the whim of his own fancy imposing whatever tax he wants. So that is the Gemara and Baba Kama. Over the page you have a Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Nun Dalad Omud Beis, and if we look at the second line, towards the end of the second line, Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Shmuel, so this is in the name of Shmuel, Nifsei Obe Kuchovim Harehen Kumidbor. When a property transaction takes place between a Jew and a non-Jew, there is a difference in kinyan going on, because there is money changing hands, but in Jewish law it's not enough just to change hands with money, you also have to have a proper deed of sale. So we're talking here about a case where money has changed hands but there hasn't yet been a written contract. So that land which has changed hands, Harein Kamidbo, it's like a desert, a wilderness, which is Hefka, because the transaction hasn't properly occurred. Whoever comes along in the meantime and claims that money, that land is his, then that land possibly could be his. My timer. In the case where the non-Jew has actually parted with money, but the Jew has not yet acquired it, until the actual contract has reached his hands. Therefore it's like unowned land. And therefore anybody who comes along in the meantime and takes it, it's his. Zochoben. Omar le'abayla Rabbi Yosef mi'om ha'shmuel. Achi, did Shmuel really say this? V'om ha'shmuel, didn't Shmuel say Dina de Malchus of Dina? U'malkot, the din of the is the land, the din of the land is the law. Omar lo lekni ara elo bi'igrotam. He doesn't acquire until he's got this proper written deed of sale. Am I there or not? I don't know. Thank you very much. I didn't know this. That's the Gemara in Baba Basra. So again, we have the din of Dinah Malchus stated, but we don't have the reasons stated. You could say to me, "Ah, well, it's common sense." Yeah, all right, it is common sense. But why is there a need to put this in the halacha? It is embodied in the halacha. The next page you have from the Dorim, and the top of the page starts of Daf Kaf Ches Amud Aleph in the middle of a Mishnah. So I'll just give you an idea of what the beginning of the Mishnah says, because I should have included it. The beginning of the Mishnah says that when you are made to vow, to take a vow about money owing, and you are basically giving an untruth, it's talking about robbers and murderers the Hamochsim, and the tax collectors. Of course, they're all in the same group. So the Mishnah there starts about those different three, where you are made to give a vow about that you don't owe any, or you don't owe anything, and you do in fact. So you're allowed to make such a neder. And then there's an argument between Shammai and Hillel about Shavuot or neder. But if we jump into the Gemara, which you've got there on the Doran Kafches, Vomashmuel, Dinah Zmachasidina. How can you say that this person is making an oath to the taxman about not owing money when he does owe money? Dinah Zmachasidina. The rule of the land is the law. The same thing again. We're dealing with a tax collector who is immoral, who is improper, who is a thief. Somebody who has self-appointed himself over others, that is where you do not have to pay the tax. But if it is, and clearly from the Mefarshim, somebody who has the agreement of the electorate, as it were, then you are bound to pay tax. And similarly, the fourth Gemara is Gittin Daf Yud Amud Beis. This is talking about the validity of documents, and the Mishnah halfway down the page. Kol ha'shtoros ha'olim ba'akos shel obei kechovim af api shechosmim ebde kechovim kesherim. Documents which come from non-Jewish sources are all valid. Chutz migitei noshim, except for a get. When a divorce takes place between husband and wife, it has to comply with Jewish law, and any non-Jewish input is invalid. And Vishchu Avodim is releasing servants of the Avodim Kananim. Vishimunam af elu kasherim, even they are kosher. Lovus kru elavus man shenasu behediot. We're talking there where it might be written by an unqualified person who doesn't know how to write shtoros. So the Gemara there gives the same thing about Dino de Malchus Adino from Shmuel. And therefore, there's a validity given to non-Jewish documents. Those are the main Gemaras which talk about Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah. Again, there is no rationale, though. What's the? Usually, when you get a din, it says Shenemah, as it says in the Pasuk, because he says this, or because who says this, and it doesn't happen here. Why not? There are in the Rishonim, though, a number of reasons given. And we then benefit from the explanations which are given from them. The first thing we said today was about Peke Ovos, that those having mispalo the Shlomo Shel Malchus, we should always daven for the welfare of the government. And the Mishnah carries on, Shel Molei Maro, because without this fear of the state, Ish Esrei Eyu Chaim Baloo, a person would swallow up his fellow citizen alive. That doesn't mean it literally that we're going to become cannibals and eat up each other, but it means there will be anarchy. If there wouldn't be a law of the state, then everything would go haywire, there would be complete disorder and dysfunctioning. So you need to have the laws of the state, as well as the halachas. Providing, of course, that those laws of the state are not conflicting with the halachas. What does that mean? In this country nowadays, the Catholic adoption agencies are talking about closing up, because it is being forced upon them that they are to give children to couples who are in civil unions, not according to the Torah, and the Catholics follow that. So that is a din of the halacha for us as well, and you cannot bend that just because of the law of the state. In fact, it's relating to civil partnerships, which are Yarag Valyava. We've now just this week got something from the Court of Appeal about the Jewish Free School having to take in children who are not halakhically Jewish, and this is a problem for us. And it's probably going to be challenged in the House of Lords, but if the law of the state dictates to us something which is directly against the Torah, we can't nullify the Torah. And it's important to recognize this, because the reform, in fact, try and use this principle of Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah to allow almost anything and everything, even if it goes against the Torah. Well, you can't do that. That's a complete misuse of what the halacha is saying. You cannot nullify the Torah. So where does Dinah D'Malchus HaDinah apply? And one of the principles then is to avoid the anarchy. And the Gemara of Azari Ches talks about the phrase Kimin Hashemayim Bifuha. There is a certain divine gift given by Hashem to the king of the country, to the queen of the country. The Ran in the Dorim Kafches, on the one of the Gemaras we've quoted, says the whole principle of Dina de Malchus Dina is based on the fact that if you don't like the rules of the country you live in, then don't live there, go somewhere else. Or the king can say, I can expel you. You can be repatriated. If you are living in this country, then it's assumed that you are accepting the rules of the country, and therefore you have to go along with it. The Rashba brings the Pasuk from this week's Sedra Pashas Chukas. Vayilachem Yisrael vayish mimenu shevi. So the Canaanite king comes along and he takes the spoil of war, as if to say he is entitled to it, because the king of the country is in charge. Rashi on a Gemara Bava Tzia Ayin Gimel talks about the idea that when you are a citizen of the country, you're like a slave of the monarch. You are, what you have belongs to the monarch. And this is very important actually, because there is an idea that the land that you own isn't really yours. When you buy a property in this country and in most other countries, the government could take it away from you by compulsorily purchasing it. Alright, there are rules about compensation, but that doesn't give you complete sovereignty over the land that you own. If the government wants to build a motorway through your back garden, there is nothing to stop them. However much you can go through the legal challenges and so on, at the end of the day, they have that right of compulsory acquisition. There is an interesting chapter in Shmuel Aleph, which is called Parshas HaMelech. In chapter 8 of Shmuel Aleph, there is the concept of where Shmuel the Novi is trying to discourage the people from having a king. The people say they want to have a king, and he warns the people against the evils of having a king. And he said, amongst other things, he will tax you heavily. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chof on the base asks, was Shmuel HaNovi exaggerating the limits of a king's authority, or was he accurately portraying the rights of the king, namely to impose tax as he wishes? And the Gemara concludes with really the second aspect of it. And it says, Kol ha'omu b'parshas ha'melech, melech mutabo. Whatever is written about the rights of the king, yes, he is entitled to do what he does. And that is the svara for Dina d'malchus ha'dina. And the Meiri follows this along, and the Vilna Gaon in Simon Shim Samach Tes carries this forward. Then there is another aspect. The Rashbam in Baba Basra and Nundalad, he says that when people live in the country, everyone is there by admission. The fact that they're living in the country, they're accepting the rule of the king or the government. And that is willingness on their part. Just like people accept the currency of the realm, that they're trading in pounds or in dollars or whatever it is, they are thereby acknowledging the government as the master of the realm. And this is brought down by the Rambam in Hilchos Gezeila V'Aveda, Perek Hei, Halacha Yud Ches. A more modern source, Rav Shapiro, the Rav of Kovno, talks about the idea of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. We spoke before about compulsory acquisition. Just like a Bezdin can take land or property away from one person, and even perhaps give it to another person, so the state in which you live can practice this idea of taking property away from you. Hence the idea of Dina d'malchus ha'dina. Tosfos actually give the idea of taxation being like a rent. That when you live in the country, just like you pay rent to a landlord if you're a tenant, when you're living in a country, you're like paying rent to the king, to the government. And that's the idea of taxation. And you'll see that what I've been saying generally very much refers to the subject of taxation, because you might ask, well, does Dina d'malchus ha'dina apply to everything? And the primary idea, say the Poskim, as Dina d'malchus ha'dina is to pay tax to the realm. That just like it is a mitzvah to follow the laws of Shabbos and Kashrus, so it is also a mitzvah to pay tax to the king or the government in the country in which you live. So you might say to me, is that min ha'Torah? There is in fact a machlokus between the poskim whether it's min ha'Torah midrabbono. The Beis Shmuel in Kafches Gimel Choshenishma, he says that it's a din d'rabbono, but there are others, and in fact lots of sources, who say that the din of dina d'malchus ha'dina say it's d'oraisa. So holds the Bnei Tzion, Rav Ettinger in Chelek Beis Tesvov. The Dvar Avram writes this, Shalas Shuvas Chasam Sever writes this, and Yerodea Shin Yudala, the Avnei Menurim writes this. They all say it's a din min ha-Torah. I can see the accountants are smiling already. Well, I wasn't here to try and appease them, but Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in Igros Moshe in Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Beis, Samach Beis, he says, you have to generally obey laws which are intended for public order and to stop any anarchy. And that is the fundamental idea underlying Dina de Malchus Adina. Now today we're only then going to touch on a small number of practical issues, and that's why we're going to have a part two when we're going to deal more with certain Shalas and Shuvas, and not just taxation, but we're going to ask questions about other aspects of civil law as well. There are questions relating to the law courts. What about conscription, national service, and issues like that? We're going to come to a lot of those. But there is an emphasis on Hilchos Gezeilah Aveda about taxation. Because some people might say, well, I feel like the money which I'm paying in tax is being stolen from me. I never made a contract with the government. It feels as though I never agreed to this, and therefore the government are thieves. And that is the feeling one has when one pays large numbers of tax. But given those svaros we've given, the idea of what you're agreeing to by being a citizen of the country, there is no theft, providing what we learn from these gemaras is that it's done fairly and equitably throughout the general population. If it is, as I said earlier, one particular district of Hendon has to pay more tax than everybody else in the country, then that's not considered fair in halacha. That's not Dina de Malchus Adina. To target the Jews specifically would not be considered fair, according to most views. Well, yeah, rates is also a tax, but rates is determined according to property values, but the government vests its authority in local authorities in respect of council tax. So we can't try to argue that council tax is not Dina de Malchus Adina. That would be very hard. Now, even where you might find a loophole in the halacha, even where you might find some loophole which would suggest that you are not obliged to pay because you feel that Dina de Malchus Adina doesn't apply, he pointed out to me the Be'er HaGolah at the beginning of Simon Reish Samach Vov in Choshen Mishpat and Simon Shin Mem Ches, that where you are returning items of lost property, where you might feel that legally you are not obliged to do so according to the law of the state, because the law of the state isn't that you have to return a lost article, nevertheless you are duty bound to do it in halacha, because if you don't, you will be impoverished of your possessions and you will not leave anything to your descendants if you are not honestly giving in what you should morally do. And those people, he says, and he says it in very strong language, those people who return items to non-Jewish sources will greatly benefit, and God will reward them and make them rich, and they'll have hatzlacha in every single way. It is a mekadesh shem shemayim barabim kadeshi yifaru es Yisrael. And I know a story from Gershon Hepner, who told me that there was a rabbi who got on a bus in America, and he was given too much change. As he got down to his seat, he realized that he was given too much change, and before he got off the bus, he went up to the bus driver and said to him, "You've given me too much change, I'm giving some back to you." And the bus driver said to him, "I could see that you're the new rabbi in this town and I wanted to test you." It was a Jewish bus driver. And he said, "Because you showed to me your integrity, I admire you and I'm going to start coming to shul from now on." So we never know the effect of our actions. And when we practice yashrus, being straight, 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 all the way, we are being told by the poskim that even if you're going beyond what the halacha requires of you, then I would say to you, you will be enriched by it and you will be mekadesh shem shemayim. So all these dodges and possible ways of trying to find ways out is something which can be very dangerous. It was the Shirin Pidyon HaBen when we spoke about Rabbi Munk, who was so honest in declaring the coins he got for the Pidyon HaBen. I'm not sure everyone would do that. I'm not sure if even the taxman would require that. But it shows the idea of yashrus, that a person has to be straight. And when you are straight, you can never go wrong. The din of the Torah is lo sigzel. So the poskim generally say that when you're not paying tax, it's called gezel akum, which is not allowed. You're stealing, which is not allowed. According to Rav Shechter, he writes that he thinks that the din of not paying tax comes under lo sashok esreach of a lo sigzol. Lo sigzol means actually putting your hand in the till and taking out money. That's stealing. But if you have money in your pocket, which should really go to the tax man, he says that's called lo sashok esreach of it. You are withholding money, which isn't rightfully yours, and it comes under a separate prohibition of lo sashok esreach of. It is, but he learns out that lo sashok applies in this instance to the non-Jew as well, because you have a duty to pay tax. And he says, if you falsify your tax return, that is sheker, and then there is dinim of sheker involved, it's about sheker tirchak. So, to actually write something falsifying the tax return is called sheker, and sheker applies equally, Jew and non-Jew alike. Now, let's say you're aware of a shop which doesn't pay its tax or its VAT. Are you allowed to support such a shop? And he writes, Rav Shechter writes, that really, if you know for sure that somebody is fiddling his tax or not registering himself for VAT when he should be registered for VAT, he says, halachically, you shouldn't even go into that shop.
A Jewish shop or a non-Jewish
shop? Either. Jewish or non-Jewish?
I've seen plenty of small news agents that don't ring up on the till. If they're not ring up on the till, they don't pay the till, they cancel the transaction.
The question is, you are not doing a direct issur. If you go into a news agent and they don't ring it up on the till, and you know they're not going to register for tax, it's not that you are stealing from the government, it's that you are performing the prohibition of don't put a stumbling block before the blind. You are enabling somebody else to do something wrong. You're not liable. According to the law of the state, you're not liable. You can't be prosecuted because you go to a news agent and then the news agent doesn't pay tax. That's not called aiding and abetting. But there is the question of, is there in Jewish law that you might be putting a stumbling block before the blind? The question is then, do you have a duty to tell on such a shopkeeper? You don't have to go as far as telling on the shopkeeper. That's another din, that's Masir al-Akum, that's something else. But to actually support somebody who is evading tax, that is a big problem. I have a friend who runs a textile business who was once visited by a customer in the shop, and the customer says, oh, don't worry about the receipt, I'm paying in cash. And so the price quoted was still the same price, including the VAT. He said, but I'm paying in cash, I don't have to pay the VAT. And the shop assistant said to the customer, well, I'm sorry, but it doesn't make any difference. If you pay in cash, we still charge the VAT and we still pass it on. But no, you don't have to, I'm paying in cash. And the fellow insisted that he shouldn't have to pay the VAT. And the assistant said, well, look, it's like this. We like to be able to sleep at night. We don't want to have to try all these drays. We want to be able to sleep at night. I'm sorry, we always charge the VAT. And the fellow said to him, I'm glad you said that because I'm the VAT inspector. Now, this is a shop. People walk around in their yarmulkes. Imagine the chilul Hashem which would have resulted had the fellow said, yeah, all right, okay, pay in cash and we'll sort it out for you. In fact, the Apostle would say it's primarily because of the Chilul Hashem which can accrue that you have to make sure that you comply with Dina de Malchus Adina. That is the underlying concept of it all, that it will get around. News gets around that, oh, the Jews are tax dodgers, and that they're getting the benefits of the state in every possible way, the street lighting, the police, the fire service, anything. It's quite normal, and in times gone by, in historic times, when the king imposed the tax, it was really a tax for himself, for the monarchy. And nowadays, tax is much more something in a democracy which is shared out. For those who have less benefit in their employment, they can then be assisted by the state. So we, as taxpayers, are enabling the smooth functioning of the country, together with all these benefits of the realm, like the street lighting and the police and the fire service. We are, generally speaking, in a malchus shel chesed. We have to be glad that we are able to practice our Yiddishkeit generally in a manner which our previous generations did not manage to do. And it's really part of our appreciation of that, in recognition of what the country does for us, that we can do the least possible recognition of reflection and return to be able to comply with the rules and conform to what is, according to many, a din daraisa, dinu de malchus of dina. But as we said, there are occasions when the law of the land cannot be followed if it conflicts with the law of the Torah. If the state recognizes a divorce, that is not enough to recognize a divorce, because the get has to be given in accordance with Jewish law. Otherwise, chas v'shalom, we'll have a situation of married women taking on second marriages and having children while mamzerim. And then there are other questions. What if you are summoned to appear before a court to testify against somebody else who is Jewish, and as a result they will go into prison? We will discuss some of these sorts of questions next time, which are practicalities relating to other aspects besides taxation. And those interesting questions we will have to leave till instalment number 2. Thank you very much.